What's up, guys? I'm sure many of you play fantasy football. I know I do. I know Weiss does. If you need some advice, make sure you stay ahead of the curve with a new podcast called Fantasy Foresight. Jay and Ben, they focus 100% on fantasy football. They share their total foresight with private metrics and projections you can't get anywhere else, and they want to help you win your fantasy football league. If you play fantasy football, whether you're a veteran like myself or this is your first season, you can't afford to miss their podcast. It's called the Fantasy Foresight Podcast. Make sure to check them out.
Hi, are there any local companies that rent anti-gravity machines?
Anti-gravity machines?
That's right, yeah.
What do they do exactly?
They make you feel lighter.
Anti-gravity. Anti-depressant? I could put you through to someone on that.
Okay.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, the Wheezy F Baby edition. Ethan Weiss here with you once again after a heart-wrenching loss to the Carolina Panthers. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. And you know what we got to do? Wheezy S, baby. The S is for motherfucking subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. We're everywhere. Smash that subscribe button. We're everywhere. If we're not on your favorite podcast app, you know the drill. You DM me, you tweet me. We'll get it up there for you. All right. And I guess, yeah, let's shout out our sponsors. We'll get into them later in the episode. Shout out to the folks at Fantasy Foresight, mybookie.ag, as well as the folks at Vivid Seats. Weiss, I crushed it NFL Sunday on my bets. We'll get into that when we do the MyBookie ad read later. But let's get into some Giants football, and there's a lot to talk about. Not all of it related to on the field. A lot going on off the field, and it wouldn't be the New York Giants if that wasn't the case. So where do you want to start? We could start with Odell and Lil Wayne. We could start with Ereck Flowers. We could start with the actual game that was played on Sunday. I'll throw it to you first because I truly don't care, and I've got a lot to say about everything.
Well, let's go in chronological order as to what happened. So let's start with the Odell interview.
Let's start with the Odell interview. All right.
So takeaway, right? My takeaway from this is that I believe that, you know, Odell has had a crazy start to his career.
Yes.
I mean, it has been a roller coaster with this guy. But I truly believe that Odell, so hear me out completely before you guys just get on me. I truly believe Odell is one of the most misunderstood superstars in all of sports.
I agree.
And I think a lot of that is because Odell is not good with words.
Okay, I would agree with that.
And he doesn't really get optics.
He's like the friend that you have that always has good intentions but doesn't always come across that way.
Exactly. And somebody needs to get in this guy's ear. But here's my thing about why he's misunderstood. I don't believe Odell is a me guy. I don't think he's that type of guy.
I think he's the opposite.
Me too. I think Odell is the ultimate team guy. Odell is not about the money. Odell is not about the numbers. What Odell is about is Odell wants to be legendary. Odell wants to build a legacy. Odell Beckham wants to be the guy that when people talk about that great team, he's that great player.
Yep.
He wants to bring a championship to New York because he knows that if he does that for his legacy and for him playing in this city, it will just propel him to another level.
Now, I'll step in real quick because I honestly didn't expect you to go in this direction. And just to add on to your argument, if you look at the landscape of New York sports, New York sports is fucking horrendous. As a New York sports fan, unless you're a Yankee fan, and even then, listen, we're not going to know the results until tomorrow, but I truly think the Red Sox are going to close the deal here. The Jets suck. The Giants suck. The Islanders suck. The Rangers suck. The Knicks suck. The Nets suck. So everybody in New York fucking sucks. And it's mind-boggling considering that this is the mecca of sports. So for someone like Odell, who's truly a talented player, the lane is wide open. Now, it's unfortunate because, you know, he's not a basketball player where one player can just take over a game, even though we have seen him we have seen him do that in the past.
Right.
But having a team that is clearly a work in progress, forget what Dave Gettleman is saying, the lane is wide open. There's really no, like, megastar or, like, powerhouse sports team in New York right now. And Odell wants that to be the Giants, and he wants to be that face.
Right, right. And this is... this is where I'm going with, and you brought up a great point about basketball. The issue with that, with this situation, is Odell plays the ultimate team game. And in that ultimate team game, he plays a position that is very reliant on other positions.
Agree.
Meaning he's reliant on the quarterback and he's reliant on the offensive line to block for him to be able to get to a spot where he can catch the ball.
Reliant on coaching to scheme him properly, everything.
Right. Exactly. So what we saw in that interview was Odell saying, I want to win, but we aren't winning. Here's why.
Yep.
And he gave you the honest truth. Now, if you're somebody that says, you know, he shouldn't have said this publicly, you're not going to like that. You're not going to like that. And a lot of people don't like that. If you're somebody that, you know, says, hey, you know, he needed to be honest. Somebody needed to be honest. Then you're loving. But for me, the way I look at it is nothing good comes out of this interview. Odell didn't need to do this interview for him to make his case. Everybody knows it. Nobody was sitting here blaming Odell for the Giants' struggles. So there was no need for it, I don't think.
Okay.
So what you do by doing that is you create this diversion. You allow people. And the thing about it was, while he was direct, he was how I would say indirectly direct. He kept the door open for people to perceive his comments whichever way they want to. And when that happens, then you start allowing people to put words in your mouth.
Right.
But for me, I understand where Odell's coming from. I think his whole stance on this, his whole philosophy is being misunderstood. I do think he's a team player. I do think he's in it for the love of the game, and he wants to win. He wants to be a champion. But again, the team that he plays for is just right now not in that position to win. And I think part of this interview was based out of frustration. And personally, I don't think that it was necessary for him to do this.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean,
that's my take on it.
I mean, necessity. Yeah, like I don't think that was a necessity. On some of your points, like listen, nothing that he said was false. Right, the team needed to take more shots downfield. The team needed a fire lit under their ass. What did we see on Sunday? We saw exactly that. We saw the team taking shots downfield, both to Odell and from Odell. I might add, we saw some better coaching and players that were genuinely fired up. So, you know, the intention was in the right place. Could it have been said better? Sure. You know, something that is going to be forgotten about in 2 weeks, dependent on the Giants' record and where they are, because the NFC East stinks out loud. And it's, like, disgusting to say that there are people out there that actually have hope that they can win the division. We'll get into that later. But, yeah, that's pretty much my take on the interview. Probably unnecessary, going to be made a big deal of regardless of what he said, but nothing that he said was untrue.
And the reason is that, and this is what I'm talking about, is I think Odell is so bad with his words, and he doesn't understand optics, that it's almost as though, and even if you watch like his regular weekly interviews, he says things that could be perceived the wrong way. And, you know, I think Odell... he has to take some PR lessons, and he has to choose his words wisely, because some of the things he says, if you're somebody that, for example, if you're not a Giants fan, you don't follow the team and you don't understand the players on their roster, you could perceive some of the things he says the wrong way, but you just got to be smarter. I think nothing about this interview, in my opinion, says Odell is being a leader. You can make a case that this interview comes off as Odell basically pointing the finger at everyone else but himself. I don't see it that way. I've already explained how, and we sort of agree on how we see it. But it's just bad optics, man. Nothing good comes out of this. So we'll see how the team responds. I know they, you know, offensively they had a pretty good game, mm-hmm. but they still lost.
Yep.
So, but we'll see what happens from this. But, you know, who knows? You know, I just think that you have to be a little bit smarter with your words if you're going to do something like this.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk Carolina. Let's talk the game on Sunday. Hard loss.
Such a heartbreaking loss.
Only the Giants. Let me just say,
when he was lining up to kick that,
you knew it was going in.
And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, this happened last year.
I was doing the math in my head. I was doing the math, and I was like, oh God, it's 63. Knew it was going in.
Yeah, when they said that, oh well, here comes Graham Gano to attempt the field goal. Mm-hmm. I immediately Googled, you know, Jake Elliott.
Yeah,
I was 61 yards.
Yep.
I mean, it was a heartbreaking loss, and they fought. I mean, this was, I thought, a game that, I mean, it was from, I felt like I was watching six games in one.
Right.
I mean, there were so many ups, there were so many downs, there were so many times where you thought, holy crap. I mean, we're done, and then, you know, we turn around, make a comeback, and then we make another mistake, and mm-hmm. it was crazy. But to me, biggest takeaway from this game is that this team, you know, maybe this will be this way the entire season, but this team can't survive crucial mistakes.
Correct.
They can't, when they're driving down the field, they can't turn the ball over because it's hard for them to overcome that. Whereas other teams, they might be able to do so. Dropped passes. I just think that it's tough for them to overcome. Even penalties. When they get into second and long, given the fact that their offensive line is not that good, you know, it's struggling for them. And, you know, they're still a big play offense where they're still very reliant on the big play.
Yeah.
And they got a lot of big plays on Sunday, and I think that's why you saw them finally break that 30-point that streak of, you know, not scoring 30 points.
Yep.
But, you know, again, it goes back to everything that we've been talking about. You have to be able to make plays in crucial moments, and you have to be able to protect the football. And I think that in this game, while Eli Manning did a lot of good things in that fourth quarter, again, the two interceptions were killer, especially the one where they're driving down the field and he mm-hmm. turns the ball over. That was just crucial. And now Cam, he threw interceptions of his own. I thought Carolina, some of their play calling was just atrocious. Especially late in that game to keep the Giants in it. So
I passed a comment on Twitter last night after watching the Monday night game, and I don't know whether it was just me taking a special note of it, but the play calling this week in the NFL was so especially garbage. Now, I know it's bad league-wide, but there were just some head-scratching decisions across the league, especially from Ron Rivera.
Yeah, North Turner, I mean, who? Oh.
Yuck.
Carolina, I mean, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't – North Turner, I've seen enough of him. Okay, so my biggest takeaway is that the Giants, they're just not that good of a team where they can survive some of these crucial turnovers. And officiating, it sucks, man. And I'll say this, I'm not going to sit here and say – the Giants lost this game because of officiating. So you're going to lose when you lose games. There's many things that can decide the impact, decide the outcome of games. One of those things on Sunday for the Giants was officiating. It was bad. The Landon Collins phantom roughing. Unnecessary roughness.
Kerry Wynn roughing the passer.
Yeah. I mean, atrocious.
Yep.
Atrocious. Late in the game with McCaffrey, whether he got it or not, that play deserved the review.
Agree.
And with Carolina not having any timeouts, if he was essentially didn't get the first down, them having to rush the field goal unit out there, that would have been much tougher than, you know, being able to stop the clock and bring your field goal unit out there. So Not saying that that officiating necessarily cost the Giants the game, but it definitely had an impact on this game. So
I'll agree and I'll disagree to a certain extent. I think, you know, what you said before about the Giants not being able to overcome crucial mistakes, that's the indication of a bad team. And I tweeted out after the game, and a lot of people took issue with this. And I feel like a lot of people expect me to walk back this comment, but if anything, I'm going to double down on it. Good teams win close games. Now, the officiating was horrendous. The call on Collins was bullshit. The call on Wynn was bullshit. And that McCaffrey, first of all, Ron Rivera and North Turner, what the fuck are you doing running on third and one in that situation? Like, no, I'm serious. Like, I was going to use a word. Not going to use it. So unbelievably stupid. Should have been measured regardless. Now, before I get into everything else, let me just talk about the third and one. It's a controversial belief, but I sent you the screenshot. Mm-hmm. I legitimately think that if they were to review it and measure it, I do not think that the evidence would have been conclusive enough to overturn it. I think the tip of the ball, based on where McCaffrey's arm was probably, and listen, the yellow line's not conclusive, was bordering that first down marker. Now, whether or not he got it, one, it should have been measured. But two, if they bring out the sticks, Ron Rivera and Norv Turner are on their headsets. They got guys up there that are looking at the film. They know what's going on. While they're measuring, that field goal team is ready just in case. Right? Let's not act like this is some fire drill where it's literally going to be 10 seconds for them to get on the field. That field goal team is ready, on the field, ready to go. Would it be a little bit harder? Sure. But Graham Gano would have cleared that from 75 fucking yards. So was it a questionable call? Possibly. Should it have been measured? Definitely. Would it have had a serious impact on the game? Sue me, I don't think it would have been a vastly different outcome. Now, on the officiating for the rest of the game, agree. Horrendous. But you know how the Giants also win that game? If they don't give up over 30 points, if they don't take three defensive penalties on one drive, if they sack Cam Newton literally once on second or third down on that final drive, if they don't have special teams blunder after special teams blunder, they win the game. There are little moments throughout the game that if you just execute like you do in practice, like you're supposed to, the New York Giants win that game. It's not on one individual player. They need to play as a unit. Okay, and when the players are coming out and blaming officiating, yo, if you want to shit on the officiating, be my guest, because it was objectively terrible. And I'm sure the NFL is like, oh, well, look at the film and send an apology. It was objectively terrible. You need to execute better. Their pass rush has been dog shit. I understand that
it's non-existent.
Now, we'll get into whether or not Olivier Vernon coming back Thursday night is going to dramatically help them. I keep going back and forth, but we'll figure it out later in the show. That pass rush is non-existent. Literally, you sack Cam once on that last drive, I think the game's over. I know he's got the ability to run. I know they have the read option with McCaffrey. I know he can dump it off to McCaffrey. Sack him once. The pass rush is horrendous. I genuinely think that James Betcher is doing a decent to good job. I think the praise that I've seen on Twitter is being a little overblown, because the number one thing that we learned about this guy coming into the season was that he got guys in position to succeed, and two, that he loved to blitz. And the pressure that we're seeing hasn't been indicative of that at all.
I don't think he can blitz. I think the secondary is too weak for him
You got Landon Collins, you got Janoris Jenkins, and you got Eli Apple back. Send an extra man.
But it doesn't even
need to be on the last drive. At any point throughout the game, I need to see them blitz more. I understand B.W. Webb sucks and Curtis Riley is your free safety. You got to take a chance. You have to. You're not going to win football games if you're rushing three, rushing four, and getting zero pressure. You're just not.
Yeah, I mean, you make up a good point. And that's something that a lot of coaches around the league do, is late in the game, they just start dropping people back, like on drives.
They're playing soft defense.
Yeah, and they're just sitting back.
Put them in a second and long, third and long. Make it hard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're right. It was tough, man.
If Eli doesn't throw those two crucial interceptions, if the ball doesn't hit the back of Odell's leg, if Janoris Jenkins picks up the ball jumps on the ball instead of trying to pick it up and run with it, if it doesn't hit Eli Apple's leg, if B.W. Webb doesn't take two penalties on the same fucking play. these are the plays that matter. And we're just focusing on the end of the game because that's what's most fresh in our minds. And it was a call that should have been measured. And it was a tough field goal. There are plays throughout the game that you need to make to ensure that poor officiating does not affect the outcome. And that's what good teams do. Good teams put themselves in a position where bad officiating does not cost them games. The Giants did not do that on Sunday. Officiating is dog shit around the league. It was especially dog shit for the Giants. You cannot risk leaving it in the hands of the officials. And that's it.
But see, the thing I'll counter you with is that, I mean, look, the end of the game is the end of the game. You know, you bring up good points, but the thing about the officiating is this, is that, you know, I think that we've sort of made it a custom. It's a new norm that officiating is bad around the league. What I'm saying is that officiating should not impact games, and it's starting to do that. Whether it's the roughing the passer penalties that are being called around the league, whether it's these bogus hitting a defensive receiver. See, the play on Landon Collins where they called the penalty. Landon Collins is diving for an interception. That should have been fourth down, them punting the ball. When you basically gave them a first down, you know, and I know that, you know, they still went down the field and scored a touchdown, but mentally it is a huge, you know, it's a big mental shot on someone on a defense where you make a great play, ref throws a penalty, you're pissed off about that, you know, and all of a sudden they got a first down and they're still driving. So listen, I agree with you. But my whole thing is when it comes to officiating, it should not have as big of an impact on games as it's having right now. And it's only a matter of time. I'm telling you, it's only a matter of time before it seriously costs a team a playoff game, a chance at a Super Bowl, and even a Super Bowl.
I mean, you're not wrong. But my counter is this. Are you going to stop the game every 5 minutes to review calls, penalties? These games are going to take 5-6 hours if that's the case.
Here's the thing. The NFL right now has too many. The way they define these rules, they use too many adjectives. You know, it's sort of like the way they worded the anthem rule, like disrespecting the anthem. Well, how can you define that? Some of the ways they define these rules is confusing to players, you know? And on top of all that, each officiating crew is calling these penalties differently. So whether it's reviewing it, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that we should be able to review every single penalty that is called. No, but there has to be a system where, you know, these things aren't happening. Now, I understand nobody's perfect. Refs are going to make a mistake. But it is happening way too commonly. Now, you almost expect it to happen to you every game. There's been questionable calls for the Giants in back-to-back games. So my whole thing is, you know, something has to be done about this because at the end of the day, you know, it's like I said over the weekend, you know, after the game, you know, this league is about wins and losses. And when you have officiating impacting games, it's impacting jobs. And so people are losing their jobs because of this. So it's not fair. You know, and you know, it's inexcusable that penalty was called. If just look at that penalty alone, of the unnecessary roughness, right? Just look at that one alone. They huddled up, and they still called the penalty. In the world we live in today, it could take you about 15 seconds to call up to someone in the booth who can look at a replay right away and tell you if that penalty should be called or not.
I agree with that.
You know? I mean, look, they did it during the World Cup with the whole goal or not or offsides or not. I mean, it was a quick 15 seconds ref – microphone to a center somewhere in Russia during the World Cup, and they would give you an answer right away. So some of these things, you know, I'm not sitting here saying take a minute, 2 minutes, and go and look at it from six different angles, but you know, there has to be something put in place where, you know, we get these things correct. And right now, like I said, man, it's impacting games. It hurt the Giants on Sunday. Who knows? Maybe on Thursday, the Giants will benefit from it. But my stance is still the same. I think officiating in this league, it's ruining the game, in my opinion. So, and it's not just the calls. There's inconsistency of calls. There's the way they define these rules are just ridiculous and tough to understand. And because of that, that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. So, you know, you got the NFL has to fix this shit. So, I mean, I don't want to spend all episode talking about officiating, but, and it's not just the Giants game. There was horrible officiating across the board, you know, in every game.
Every week. Clay Matthews gets fucked every week.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Michael Bennett was called for a roughing the passer that I looked at and I'm like, what the hell? People said, well, why don't you just put a red jersey on the quarterback? There basically is a red jersey on the quarterback.
Yeah.
It's just not red, but it is a red jersey. It's practice rules. You touch them the wrong way, you're going to get flagged. So, you know.
I mean, the rules make the Giants' offense even more embarrassing.
It's.
They do. You can't touch the quarterback. Can't touch a receiver. Took them 2 years to hit 30 points. All right. Anything else in the Carolina game?
Oh, dear God, let's move on from it.
All right, let's move on. Up next on the docket, what do you want to talk? Eric Flowers?
Eric Flowers. There was some good news that came from the Giants.
Yeah, it was.
Eric Flowers. Eric Flowers.
Now,
I mean,
the funniest thing to me is that when the New York Giants tweeted out the news that they had waived Eric Flowers, the tweet was sponsored. The tweet was sponsored. They waived a first-round pick, and the tweet was sponsored. And not sponsored by anybody. It was sponsored by Prime Point LLC. Weiss, do you know what Prime Point LLC does?
I don't. Well, I do know after seeing your tweet, but why don't you share it with the audience?
Prime Point is a payroll and human resources management company that focuses on creating solutions with technology and a high level of customer service.
There you go. There you go. How about that?
The tweet was sponsored by an HR company.
There you go.
Unreal. It's happy days. I don't like to gloat or really celebrate when someone loses their job, because, you know, if it happened to you or it happened to me, we'd be upset and we wouldn't like it when people are gloating. But Eric Flowers is a multi-millionaire and has a shitty attitude, and it honestly sometimes looked like he tried to get Eli Manning killed. So
yeah.
On a day like today, I rejoice.
I mean, here's the thing, though. I'll take it from two angles. Number one, releasing Eric Flowers 5 weeks into the season just shows how bogus of a plan it was to just hand him the right tackle job without any serious competition. Now, Chad Wheeler has played well since he's come on. He's improved game to game.
Decent, yes.
Yeah, he's not.
He's no all-star, but we don't expect him to
be. In no way, shape, or form are we saying he's a long-term answer at right tackle, but he's been decent. He's been okay. Now, 5 weeks into it, you're releasing a guy that you handed the right tackle position to, a guy that had a shitty attitude from the moment he walked in, but was especially shitty when you signed a left tackle that was a lot better than him, and he didn't show up to offseason workouts. And then all of a sudden he comes back and he's like, here's the right tackle spot. 3 weeks later, you bench him. 2 weeks after that, what do? You release him.
Yeah.
You know, flawed approach. We talked about it.
I mean, listen, a flawed approach from Dave Gettleman is nothing that we're, it's no stranger.
Right. So, I'm glad he's gone. I think something happened. They won't say it because here's the thing. I sort of connected the dots a little bit with this whole thing. So, who broke the news that they were either going to release him or trade him on Monday or on Tuesday? But the news came out on Monday. Who broke the news?
Was it Schefter?
Was Schefter, yeah.
Okay.
You know who Adam Schefter is really close to when it comes to NFL agents? He's a very popular agent.
Okay, well, it's obviously Drew Rosenhaus.
And who represents Eric Flowers?
Drew Rosenhaus.
There you go. Something happened between whether it was Eric Flowers saying, I want to be released, whether it was something he did or not show up to work, or something happened for the Giants to just cut bait.
And someone reported that that all the offensive linemen went out for tacos like two nights ago, and Flowers picked up the check.
Yeah, I saw something like that. But
it's just weird.
I think something happened because they just abruptly got up and said, well, if you know, because what happened was they told Eric Flowers, look, you're done. We're going to release you by Tuesday if we can't trade you, right?
Yep.
And obviously the agent then told Schefter, because the agent doesn't want Eric Flowers to get traded somewhere that Eric Flowers doesn't want to go. They'd rather have Eric Flowers be a free agent.
Right.
So you know, obviously that impacts his trade value. So obviously Rosenhaus leaked it to Schefter, put it out there so teams can see that, hey, they're releasing this guy, you know.
Let's not don't waste trade late pick, yeah.
Exactly. So I think something happened. I don't know. Could it be he was late to meeting? Could it be that he didn't show up for work? Was it didn't practice something?
I thought we would have heard about that.
I don't know, man. It just seemed like he came out of nowhere. But maybe he just went to the Giants and said, you know, you're not playing me, release me. And the Giants said, okay, no problem.
Listen, if offensive line plays down around the league, you're a former first round pick. I don't know, man. Despite the news that has come out of the Giants camp, I feel like someone's got to take a flyer on him.
Oh yeah, he's only 24 years old.
Yeah, idiot out there is going to think that they could fix him.
Well, listen, someone thinks they're going to put him at guard and he's going to work,
or that they just got tremendous value.
Yeah, somebody's
laugh out loud funny.
You know. And maybe he doesn't get signed this year and he gets a camp invite next year.
Right.
You know, but
he's chilling with his $2 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
good riddance. That's all I got to say.
Yes, sir. I'm very happy he's gone.
Yep. All right. With that, let's go to the Eagles game. Giants Eagles in the Meadowlands on a short week.
Can you believe the 1-4 Giants are playing a big division game?
Bro, it's wild. Okay, first of all, let me say this.
Okay.
I bet the Redskins last night.
Would win?
No, just that they would cover the 6.5.
Oh, okay.
I thought that defense is good enough and that offense is, even that offense is competent enough to put up some points on the Saints. Boy, was I wrong.
See, you were looking at stat sheets.
Yep.
Of the Redskins games. You didn't actually watch the Redskins games.
Correct.
See, that's the problem.
Nor did I take into account that it was Drew Brees' record-setting game, which should have been, take the 6.5. Yeah. But, yeah, man, this is absolutely bananas. And the Eagles, I mean, listen, if you want to talk about how cursed the Giants are and how literally nothing goes their way, this will be the game the Eagles decide to wake up and play like the former Super Bowl champions.
See, from the moment the season started, I always thought that the Eagles would sort of take a big step back. And a lot of it was because I think some of their players are much older or got older. And I think that on top of that, a lot of their key players, like their quarterback, are coming back from serious injuries. Alshon Jeffrey is coming back from a torn rotator cuff.
Right. Their receiving corps sucks.
Yeah, and on top of that, their best receiver's coming back from injury, you know?
But that defense is still good. That line is still
not
intact.
Not the secondary.
Well, yeah, Jalen Mills on a double move is like when you fake throw a tennis ball to a dog and he runs anyway.
And they lost Rodney McLeod for the season, who I thought was a very good player.
Yeah.
You know, so not only are their corners bad, but they took a hit on the safeties. Malcolm Jenkins, guess what? He just turned 30. He's going to be 31. So guys are getting older. And the NFL is just the thing that people don't understand is the Eagles, while they look good on paper, there's so much more to it in the NFL. Like, the NFL is designed to not allow teams to
repeat
or be good for a long time.
Get dynasties, yeah.
Yeah, that's what makes what the Patriots have done so amazing. And everyone always says that when this topic of discussion comes up. But I just think that Philly, they're dealing with so much right now, and they just lost Jay Ajayi for the season. Yeah. Darren Sproles is hurt. And you're sort of seeing a lot of these older guys are starting to break down a little bit. Jason Peters left the game, came back. Lane Johnson has not really been himself so far this season. Their whole offensive line is in flux in terms of the interior side. I think it was their left guard had a horrible game against the Vikings. So Philly, while a lot of people coming into the season said, okay, you know, this team is going to repeat, I looked at the roster, man, and I sort of looked at it and I said, man, they have so many guys coming back from injury. And people are like, well, they're getting Jordan Hicks back. But guess what? Hicks is coming back from a torn Achilles.
Yeah, that ain't easy.
That ain't easy, right? So, look, it's if gun to my head right now, who's going to win this division, I'd probably still say Philly. But I don't say that with confidence.
No, certainly not. It's a dumpster fire. This reminds me of the season. I don't remember what year it was. It was only a few. Yeah, there you go.
I think it's worse than that, man.
It's definitely worse. We're 9-7. Dude, you might be able to win this division 8-8.
This division. Remember that one year the Seahawks won it at 7-9.
Yes, we might be looking at that.
Yeah, I mean it's an abomination.
It's terrible.
Look, and you know what's crazy? Here's another crazy thing I read today: the Giants are the highest scoring team in the NFC East. They've scored the most points.
Is that a joke?
No, that is the truth. Look it up. Now they have also given up.
Here's a wild stat for you also, just because it's fresh in my mind. Did you know that the Redskins scored their first second half touchdown last night?
Like
week
I said,
five? A lot of they people scored their Redskins first defense, second half Redskins. Touchdown in week five. The Cowboys offense stinks. Dak stinks.
I mean the Redskins gave all that money to Alex Smith.
Yeah.
You see what Kirk Cousins is doing in Minnesota?
Oh, we knew that was a bad decision.
I'm not a big Kirk Cousins guy, but I mean, I don't know how anyone can say Alex Smith is an upgrade from Kirk Cousins.
Right. He's not.
No way. I mean, did you see that play where it was fourth down? He rolled out, the guy is wide open and he waits like 6 seconds for no reason and then throws it up when the defender's there and the defender picks it off. Man,
yeah,
the Redskins are not a good team. And Josh Norman, oh my goodness,
oh my God, you see him going back and forth with Michael Thomas.
He got benched in the second half for a rookie. The rookie comes in and gets burned for a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, what were they thinking?
and then he gets into a Twitter, even then deletes his tweets.
Yes, yeah, looking like a fucking fool deleting the tweets. You never delete the tweets. Let's do our predictions for the game, and a quick analysis. Before we do that, let's bring in mybookie.ag. You've heard about them week after week. I tell you guys every week on the podcast, sign up. Follow me on the Sports Action app. Go download the Action Network app from the App Store and follow me. My link is myaction.app/Ethan. Weiss, I am using the folks at MyBookie as my personal ATM. Let me read to you my plays from this past NFL Sunday. I'll start with the loss. Let's get that out of the way. I lost a two-team teaser, 6 points. I had Giants plus 12.5 and the under 49.5. The under obviously lost. I hit a four-team parlay. Cleveland plus 3, Chiefs under 48.5, Pittsburgh minus 3, Buffalo plus 6. Hit that parlay. Then I hit Cleveland plus 3. Then I hit the under. Then I hit Green Bay second half, minus 3.5. Lost Jacksonville, plus 3. Won Jets first half. Pushed the Falcons, Pittsburgh, under 58. Won Buffalo, plus 6. Lost Oakland, plus 5.5. Won Arizona live, minus 4.5. Minnesota, plus 3. Winner. Seattle, plus 7.5. Winner. Lost Dallas moneyline on Sunday night. Had two NHL bets. Went 10-4-1 for plus 9.07 units. Sign up for mybookie.ag. Promo code NYG, 100% deposit bonus on deposits up to $1,000. They'll match it. You want to deposit 50, they'll give you 50. You want to deposit 500, they'll give you 500. Betting the NFL, never been easier. Never been easier. I'm crushing it right now, Weiss. Sign up for mybookie.ag, promo code NYG. Let's get into our Eagles-Giants predictions. What do you got for me?
I really want to pick the Giants in this game, but I just can't do it. I can't. I want to so bad. But I just think that on a short week, that loss hurts. And I think that the locker room, while people can say has, you know, enough to overcome, I just think the Eagles do enough. And the Eagles are not a good team. They're not, you know, Super Bowl contenders. They can't hang with the top dogs in the league, but I think they beat the Giants on Thursday, unfortunately.
Man.
I can't believe I'm going to do this. I want you to.
I can't believe I'm going to do this.
I had a feeling you were going to go with them.
I can't believe I'm going to do this. I think they win.
You think so?
I think they win.
They're very loose. They don't seem fazed by the fact that they're 1-4, making jokes of the whole Little Wayne Eli Manning thing. And
I had the Giants. What did I have them starting the season at before their bye? Was it 2-6?
1-6.
1-6. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, which I was going to come on here and praise you for, by the way.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Well, hey, listen, my ego could always use a little boost. You want to praise me?
Well, listen, it was a good call.
I think they win this. I really do. I don't know why.
So you think they're still alive in this division?
Technically, yes.
I mean, I think they're alive. They're like, they win, you know, and then Jacksonville goes to Dallas.
Clarify that statement.
Well, here's the thing.
Yes, they're in it. They're not for real.
They're a game and a half. Like, here's the crazy part about them. They own the number one pick in the draft, and they're a game and a half out of first place in their division.
Right.
And they could be a half a game out by the time Sunday comes around. It's an important stretch of games right now, these four games for the Giants.
Yeah.
Two division games at home, and then two Monday night games on the road with Atlanta and San Francisco, who, right. Oh, by the way, Atlanta, 1-4, they lost like six starters on defense.
Yeah.
San Francisco lost their quarterback.
That offense is going to light up the Giants. That's going to be a high-scoring game.
Pittsburgh's defense held them to 17. It's a weird league for me. Like, I can't get a hold of this league. The only thing I can tell you right now, and I think I said this last week too, is it's it's LA Rams, Kansas City Chiefs, and just about everyone else.
True, and yeah.
It's tough for me to sort of digest everything right now.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what you got to do. Are you familiar with Seinfeld?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, you got to pull a Costanza. This is how you predict the NFL. You do the Costanza method. If every instinct you've ever had is wrong, then the opposite has to be correct. Tuna on toast. That's what you have to do. If you think that Giants-Falcons is going to go over, then bet the under. If you think the Eagles are going to blow out the Giants, take the Giants +3. You do the opposite. It's a weird league. That's what you got to do. I don't know why. I think the Giants can pull it out. I'm not going to be surprised if they lose. I'll pick them to win. I'm not going to give a score prediction.
I'll give you a score prediction.
I think it honestly is going to be a very low-scoring game, strictly because divisional game, short week. Eagles front four is going to get home against the Giants offensive line, and I think the Eagles wide receivers are weak enough that that Jenkins and Apple are going to be able to hold their own a little bit. So I think it's going to be lower scoring than people think. I think the Giants could eke it out. That by no means indicates that they are a real team or a contender. I still think my original prediction still stands, 7-9.
7-9 might win the division.
Might. We don't know that. My original prediction, 7-9, still stands. I think that is honestly their ceiling at this point at 1-4. But fuck it, I'll pick them to win on Thursday against the Eagles.
I got 26-21 Philly.
Okay.
Yeah, but they need Olivier Vernon back.
They do badly.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
You got some questions for us?
I do. And the question section of the podcast is sponsored by the fine folks at Vivid Seats. Go download the Vivid Seats app on the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store. You can also see them online. Go buy tickets to the Thursday night Giants game. They're playing at home. It's a divisional game. Weiss said it. They could be half a game out by the time Sunday rolls around. If you go to the Vivid Seats website, you can get 10% off orders of 4 tickets or more with the promo code GOTHAM, GOTHAM. You can get 10% off 4 or more tickets. So grab a group of buddies, head down, tailgate for the game. Giants football doesn't interest you? Well, guess what? It's hockey season. You can get tickets to the Islanders. You can get tickets to the Rangers. Basketball season's right around the corner. Four more tickets, still 10% off. If you want to get tickets to a concert or a show, guess what? Vivid Seats can help you with that as well. Promo code Gotham, G-O-T-H-A-M, for 10% off tickets, four tickets or more. Go download their app on the App Store, and let's get into some questions. Let me pull them up on my phone right now. Got a good amount of questions this week. Here we go. This one is from Jake. What's the X factor for Thursday?
The containing the pass rush. If they can contain the pass rush, I think they can do, they can make noise on that secondary.
All right. X factor for Thursday night. I'll say the Giants pass rush. We haven't really, I ranted about it earlier in the show. We haven't seen them get home against against too many teams yet. You said it yourself. Lane Johnson hasn't looked great. Interior for the Eagles hasn't looked great. And let's be honest, they don't really have a threat at running back at this point. So whoever's going to be back there, it might be tough for them to pick up the blitz. Let's get home against Carson Wentz. And for me, the X factor is going to be the Giants pass rush.
Next, I'm going to say it's containing the Eagles pass rush.
All right, so we're on the opposite end of that. This one's from NYG Hive. He's got two questions. How much do you think Olivier Vernon will help when he comes back in terms of creating a pass rush? And second, I know you and Weiss haven't really watched draft prospects, but on the face of it, what are your opinions on Dwayne Haskins?
Ohio State quarterback, right?
Yes, Ohio State quarterback. I haven't really watched too much of him, to be quite honest. Yeah. I mean, like, the question was prefaced with that we haven't really watched too much of it. I haven't really watched too much of it. If the people want a totally unresearched opinion, I'll say he's overrated. I don't know. On Olivier Vernon, I think he helps. I mean, if you look at who the Giants have as their pass rushers right now, they've got B.J. Hill, rookie, Dalvin Tomlinson, second year. They got Snacks in the middle. And then they got Lorenzo Carter. Kareem Martin.
Connor Barwin.
Who hasn't looked great. Connor Barwin's old. And then, you know, Zoe and B.J. Hill are young. So Olivier Vernon's veteran presence right there, I mean, it's great. And he's also very, very good against the run. I feel like that's been a very underrated part of his game the last two or three years, even when he was on Miami. The fact that he's really good against the run. We don't have to worry about Ajayi or Sproles, but whoever that running back is going to have to watch out for Vernon.
Yeah, I think with Vernon, he had a really good summer in preseason. So I think getting him back is huge. He's like, I think we were asked this last week too. He's no Khalil Mack, but he'll definitely help wake up a pass rush. I think he can definitely, Betcher will use him much better than Spags did.
Well, that's a given.
Yeah.
Next question. This is a good one from Kamal. Eric Flowers wins a Super Bowl before the Giants do. True or false?
False.
Okay. Even if a team picks him up to be like their fourth tackle,
the team ain't bigger.
Because that's the scenario. A team that's got two good starters already, you know, fuck it. They'll pick up a guy because they've got the cap space and.
A team that's gonna pick him up is a team that's desperate for offensive line help.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so the Giants win before Seattle. Yeah, pair him up with DJ Fluker again.
Yeah. See, the thing is, I don't think Eric Flowers, while he's only 24. I don't think this is a situation where Flowers will be able to be like his journeyman offensive line where he jumps team to team on one-year deals. His attitude is so shitty that he'll be out of the league really quick. If you suck and you have a shitty attitude, you're not going to last.
Correct.
Like, there's some
guys. It's all about the attitude at this point.
Yeah, like there are guys that are like, they're bad, but like, you know, they work hard, they have a good attitude, so they're able to find jobs around the league, right? Eric Flowers is a shitty attitude, and because of that, he's probably not going to be in the league really, really long.
He's got the reputation already.
Yeah.
So he's fucked. From Mike, do either of you have a problem with OBJ's comments and or the way he went about saying them? I certainly don't and think that's what sparked our effort last Sunday.
No, I didn't. I don't agree with that. That is sparked. Yeah.
I don't agree.
At 1 o'clock on Sunday, many players on the Giants roster had yet to see the interview. Now, did OBJ standing up in front of the team and, you know, explaining the situation help? Maybe, but I don't think that interview I said, like I said before, it was bad optics. There's no need for that.
Yep. So,
no.
All right. Let's see. From Q Falk, since the Giants released Flowers, you think Wheeler solidified his spot as a starter at right tackle? And any chance we will see Odell at quarterback again this year? I mean, yeah, I think Wheeler is going to be the right tackle for the rest of the season. I don't think he's the long-term solution. Again, in the offensive line room, it's like being the tallest midget in the room. You know, it's not too hard to have a better attitude and try harder than Ereck Flowers. So I think Wheeler's got that position locked up. In regards to Odell at quarterback again this year, hey, I'd love to see it. You know, the
trickery, that was an awesome throw.
It was a great throw. The listen, I'm a big fan of the trickery. We haven't seen any creativity out of the Giants offense the last seven fucking years. So for Sherman to draw that up and let him loose is fun. I'd like to see them run a reverse with Odell, Saquon, maybe fuck it, throw a touch pass in there. That's trendy in the NFL these days.
Yeah.
All right. Another over under from Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Over under 2.5 wins for the Giants in the NFC East.
I'm going
to
say
they've under. Already lost to Dallas.
Yeah, I'm going to say under. I think they win 2.
You don't think they get 3?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
Uh-uh.
I'll say they can get 3.
Okay.
Okay. Next one is winner of the division has 9 wins.
Winner of the division has 9 wins. Yeah, I think that's what we're looking at right now.
I'll agree on that.
Yeah.
OBJ gets 100 yards Thursday. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, he does. Eli throws 1 interception on Thursday.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so we agree. All right, let's do this one. Last one from Parker. True or false, Eli Manning will finish the 2018 season with a career record of 500 or worse. He's 112-107 at the moment.
Well, he's 5 games above 500 right now.
Yeah, with 11 left.
So the question is, he'll finish with a record under 500?
500 or worse.
So 500 or worse. So he has 5 right now. That'll be about 9. I think he'll be at 500.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be worse than 500. I think he'll finish over.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess that's it. Any last comments?
I mean, how can we get off this episode without talking about UFC?
Bro.
Oh, okay, my goodness.
First of all, before we get to McGregor-Khabib, before we get to that, the fight beforehand.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. I feel ashamed of myself because I was literally talking about this all day.
It was a crazy fight.
It was a psychopath. What's his name? I'm going crazy right now.
I'm drawing a blank, too. But they're talking about Tony Ferguson.
Tony Ferguson. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Tony Ferguson's a fucking lunatic.
Can I tell you something? Pettis is a lunatic, too.
Yeah.
Ferguson is just more of a lunatic.
Yes.
Pettis does some crazy shit in the ring, too.
Yep.
But they're talking about Ferguson potentially being the next opponent for Khabib.
Yeah.
That would be insane.
Be unreal.
Yeah. The Ferguson-Pettis fight, like, obviously everything that happened with the main event was you know, stole everything. But that Ferguson-Pettis fight was the best fight of the night.
Oh, absolutely. Not even close.
Khabib just beat down Conor.
Yeah. I mean, from an entertainment perspective, the Ferguson fight absolutely wins. Khabib put the fucking beat down on McGregor.
What do you think about Khabib jumping out of the cage?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm a UFC guy because it combines the entertainment aspect of WWE with the violence of a street fight. Right. I live for that shit. If you couldn't tell, I love the entertainment aspect of sports. I loved the McGregor getting arrested thing. At the time, I called it that it was just a giant PR stunt for whatever fight that they were going to do. Throwing the chair at the bus and calling him out and all the shit talking and this and that. I love it. And I got no issue with Khabib jumping over and going after one of Conor's guys in the crowd.
Yeah.
I do have an issue with Khabib's guys jumping in and sucker punching Conor. But Khabib jumping out, I have no issue with. Because, listen, call a spade here. If Conor were to do something like that, we'd all be, like, loving it. And he basically did by throwing the chair at the bus and doing all that shit. So you got to see it from both sides. I love the entertainment aspect of it. I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, so I've sort of become like, I've gone from fair weather to, you know, a big fan of UFC over the last, like, ever since the whole Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor thing really sure. started to heat up. The reason why I love UFC so much is because it's so, like, unfiltered. You know, like,
yes.
they go back and forth. And Khabib came in here, and he's sort of the guy that says he's a prideful guy. Like, with the whole Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor thing, that, like, they were both, like, throwing crazy jabs at each other.
Yep.
But they were laughing all the way to the bank. This Khabib dude, now this is some crazy Muslim guy from, you know, Russia.
Dagestan. Okay?
And I can, yeah, Dagestan, right? And this dude prides himself on religion. And these are a lot of, from people from that area of the Middle East and that parts of Russia. They are, you
don't
mess
fuck
with
around.
You don't mess with their family. You don't mess with their religion.
Yeah.
You know, like, my parents are Muslim. I have Muslim family back, you know, in Afghanistan. You don't talk about people's father and mother right. and brother. And like, they will fight for their family. I got no problem with Khabib jumping out. The only thing I will say is that it took away from how he whooped McGregor's ass.
I agree. Yeah.
Like, he totally warmed down. Like,
he only hurt himself.
Yeah, exactly. But Dana White stood up there and he said, you know, it's a bad look for the UFC. And while, you know, it didn't look good.
No,
and people...
it's not. Listen, Dana White is, I wish I had a quarter of the brain that Dana White did. Dana, listen, these fucking idiots out there are like, after McGregor got quote unquote arrested in Brooklyn for whatever incident, and Dana White's like, I don't know if he was on drugs. This is a terrible look for the UFC. No, that's a press run setting up the fight. He is a marketing genius. He loves
Dana White's a promoter.
Everything. He loves everything that these guys do. He loves everything yeah. that Conor does. Dude, before the fight, before the McGregor Mayweather fight, they're laughing it up at the private airstrip. I love this video. They're going like, Dana White goes to Conor, like, he points at Conor's private jet and he goes, oh, you know, Mayweather's got five of these. And McGregor goes, yeah, you know what else he still has? Tax problems. And then they laugh together. They're buddies. They love this shit.
They're talking about Conor becoming like a minority owner in the UFC.
Yeah.
The thing is that this rivalry is great for the UFC.
Yes.
Because we're going to see a rematch. Now, Khabib might whoop his ass again.
He will.
But in no way, shape, or form do I think Khabib should have his visa revoked. Like, people are saying he should be kicked out of the country.
No.
Khabib didn't go after fans.
No, no, no.
He went after, you know, Danis, who
right.
was sort of like the engine of this whole trash talk thing and who said a lot of things to him. But, listen, Khabib is a bad motherfucker, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's one dude you do not want to mess with.
And how can we forget the Derek Lewis fight?
Yeah.
Yo.
That's another psycho.
His post-game interview was probably the funniest post-game interview in the history of post-game interviews.
So his
knockout was unreal.
So I was watching the UFC at a buddy's house, and after as that fight was ending, I got up and I think I used the bathroom.
Yeah.
And when I came back, you know, nobody said anything like, oh, he said this or that. I opened up Twitter and everyone's like, oh, it was the funniest thing. He said somebody pulled his pants down or
the
whatever.
Balls
and I
was like,
yeah, it was Derek Lewis is a crazy dude too. But I thought it was a great event.
Yep.
I think Dana White, the thing about Dana White is he's such a promoter.
Yep.
You know, he compared this whole situation to the Mike Tyson Evander Holyfield fight.
Right.
Which if you guys go back in history, sort of that thing sort of, you know, fell out into the casino and there was like fights everywhere. So Dana White is already setting this up to be a rematch, and it's going to happen. I actually think that they should bring it to New York and sort of where it all sort of came to form, this rivalry, and bring it back to Barclays, man.
Yes.
I know the UFC has a fight, I think it's 231 or 232, and the next one is actually in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But they got to bring these two guys back. I think you'll see them get suspended, and they'll sort of start creating the storyline.
Drama, yeah.
After the questions about what happened die down, Dana White's laughing to the bank, man.
He always is.
He's got to be loving it. People are already. I saw an interview with him where the guy's like, "Hey, look, Dana, I know you're not gonna like this, but I thought what Khabib did was great." And Dana was like, "Oh, you're not alone. Everyone did."
Yeah.
You don't think Dana White's sitting there smiling like, "Oh, yeah, I got it." You know, like I've created, you know, the next event. So, at the time, it was bad, but I can't wait for them.
It's going to work out.
Yeah.
They have to. All right. That's all I got.
That's all I got.
All right, guys, check out our sponsors, Fantasy Foresight, MyBookie.ag, and the fine folks at Vivid Seats. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. And you can follow me on Twitter at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Go Giants. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Peace.